Today on Hacker Public Radio, Jonathan Nadeau interviews Aaron Saigo and they talk about accessibility in KDE. After his outspoken criticism of accessibility in Ubuntu, Jonathan Nadeau has become a standard bearer for accessibility on the Floss desktop. In his interview with KDE spokesman Aaron Saigo, Jonathan didn't ask any questions about accessibility. I was expecting to hear about accessibility improvements and what was in the pipeline for KDE. When I contacted him about this, he immediately replied saying that they did talk about accessibility and he didn't add it to the show as it was already running long. He said he might release it as a separate podcast. I floated the idea of him releasing it on HPR, and he was kind enough to email me the segment. This is what you're going to hear today. The rest of the interview can be found at frostbitemedia.libsyn.com/frostcast-episode-36. All that's in lowercase. Links will be in the show notes. On a separate note, HPR has no more shows in the queue. We do have syndicated shows, but we have no HPR-generated content. HPR is a community feed, and without shows, it will cease to exist. Many people have stepped up to the plate and recorded shows, but I know there are many more out there who have it in them to contribute. With that in mind, I ask you to record a show today and send it in. All you need to do is email admin@hackerpublicradio.org and attach your audio file to that. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of today's show.
Hey, Aaron.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going, man?
Not bad. Yourself?
Oh, good. Yeah, thanks for your time.
Not a problem. Sorry about the last mix-up the other day.
Ah, no problem.
Still getting used to life here and how long it takes to get everywhere, and yeah.
what brought the move on?
I'm getting married in May.
And okay, congratulations.
Thanks. My fiance is a researcher at ETH here in Zurich.
Okay.
So since I can work from pretty much anywhere and she's tied to her research position, we decided it was probably easiest for me to move here.
Yeah, that works.
Yep.
Yeah, because you were in Canada, right, before?
Yeah, that's right, in Vancouver.
Yeah. That must be the different landscape then, huh?
Yeah, quite a bit. Fortunately, I've been here before to Switzerland and Zurich, so I have, I had some idea of what I was getting into. But it's definitely different living in a place than visiting.
Yeah, I believe it. I talked to Jeremiah Foster from Debian, and he doesn't live in Zurich, but he lives in Switzerland, and he was saying it's tough to get used to like the weather. He's like, it's I don't remember this the timing, he said, but it's dark for such a long period of time there, and people need to, like, I don't know, get under these lights and stuff so they get used to having sun and all this crazy stuff.
Yeah, it's not that far north. It's not like Finland or up in Norway where you get really dark winters, but you do get a fair amount of rain and cloudiness.
Mm.
But having come from the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, that's you're used to that.
I am an Olympic champion at dealing with gray skies. So
that's cool. Yeah, that's definitely convenient that you can just get up and go and, work from anywhere and doesn't really change your, well, I guess it must throw off your timing though. You must be like 8 hours ahead of what you're normally used to, or whatever, 12 hours ahead or something.
9 hours. I've been here for a few weeks now, and that's not a problem.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, so basically I'd like to talk to you about KDE 4.6, and maybe you can let our listeners know all the fantastic stuff that came out in that, and I don't know if, because I'm a blind Linux user, so I don't know if you know much about the accessibility of KDE. I'd like to maybe touch base on that. I'm on the mailing list for the KDE accessibility list, and it seems like there's a little more action going on there. And I don't know if you know much on that front or not, because I know you deal with like Plasmoids and stuff, but I don't know how deep into the development of like all of KDE you cover, so.
I try and stay abreast with what's going on, just because I end up doing these kind of interviews. So while I'm certainly not involved in every bit of development and design and you know all the projects directly, I do try and keep pace. Accessibility is a really interesting topic. We had gotten to a certain point with the 3.x series. Where we had, a nice screen magnifier, we had high contrast icon themes, we had a widget style that was optimized for people with various vision problems. What we didn't get to, we also had some speech to text support. What we didn't really, really get to though, was the things that, well, people who, for instance, are blind and use computers really rely on. Things such as interfaces with, Braille keyboard and being able to connect our dialogues up with screen readers. So that, as you, for you, this is obvious. I don't know if your listeners are aware, but, you're supposed to be able to go through a window and it should read all of the bits of text to you and let this is a a part of a menu and whatnot. And we never really got that going in the 3.x series. And the reasons were largely technical. There's only one stack in the open source free software world that is that really exposes that level of power for accessibility. Which is, of course, the ATK SPI stuff. So this was work that was originally funded by Sun Microsystems, which kind of dates it. They don't exist anymore, per se. But they threw a lot of time, money, and energy into it, much to their, I think, credit. Now, they did this, of course, because one of their big source of income was government contracts and deployments. And, of course, most governments these days have, basic requirements for accessibility. So if you're going to sell into a government and you have accessible software and your competitors do not, you win, and vice versa. If your software is not accessible and theirs is, you lose. So it was important. So they funded the development of this. It was tied to CORBA and GTK. Which, I mean, in one sense was understandable in the sense that, they were already putting a lot of effort and time into things. They were a very GTK-centric shop. And yeah, that was their focus. So we started working with them on how can we make this more generic, general purpose. And they'd also worked on bridges for like OpenOffice's Uno and stuff. So I mean, they did put a lot of effort into things. But we talked to them about how can we make this a little more generic and whatnot. And we did this through with cooperation with a lot of the early groups. And there was some free desktop.org stuff. We worked with some people from the American Foundation for the Blind, the earlier versions of the Linux Foundation really pitched in, and we decided that probably what the future was going towards something that was, at the time this new thing that was coming, Dbus, and instead of tying it to CORBA, which at the time Red Hat had already signaled they kind of wanted to move away from as much as possible, we'd see if we could use this Dbus thing. And this was nice because we were already using Dbus in Qt and KDE software. And this actually was one of the reasons why the Dbus bindings for Qt were funded and written, funded by Trolltech at the time, of course, which is now owned by Nokia. So we're at the point now where there's a SPI2, I believe it's called, which has had a lot of involvement from IBM. and it is Dbus driven, and that's kind of where our focus is. It still isn't all 100% there, but it looks like we finally have, the right direction. We have the right pieces in place on the Qt level, which is of course what KDE uses to write our software on top of. It has accessibility baked right into it through this class called Qt Accessible, and the challenge for KDE is that while Qt Accessible works just great on Windows and Mac, it does so less on free software stacks. So that's kind of the last mile that we're pulling together. But that's something that we will be, achieving in the 4.x timeframe, which is really exciting because I was actually involved in the very first discussions, and was the one who proposed that we step away from Corba and go to Dbus. And this was, oh God, I don't know how many years ago now, seven. I flew to conferences, thousands of kilometers away to attend and meet with these pe with people involved in it. And I never really put a lot. I wrote a few lines of code here and there, but never really a whole lot into the accessibility. I just kind of tried to help with the community side of it and get the right people talking. And so it's really cool to see some of this coming together. Outside of that, there are some really cool things happening though. Just yesterday, I think it was now, the developer who was working on the KDE chess playing application, he posted a blog where he talked about putting in two what are really accessibility features into Knights, which is the name of the application. Because Knight has a K, you see.
Yeah, exactly.
You may not always hear them now, but they're still there. So the two accessibility features were text-to-speech output, which we still have, and it works very well. But was the other side of it was speech command. And what there was really exciting about it wasn't like, oh, look, our chess program is accessible now. It's more the ease of which this was possible because of all the work that's been going on in accessibility. So what he used for voice command was a very, very powerful cross-platform application called Simon.
Yeah, I've heard
And
of that.
have you played with it at all,
No, I
or?
haven't. I've seen it though recently in a few mail. I'm pretty much assigned to any accessible mailing as possible, and I've seen that name f flown around the past couple of weeks, and I've been wanting to check it out, but I haven't actually checked it out yet.
Well, cool. I really recommend it. It's really neat. Even for people that don't need the accessibility benefits of it, it's really nice. Basically, it allows you to navigate your entire computer, including setting up custom, interactions and commands with voice. And it's a multi-layer system, so you don't have to set up sets of long commands that do, each specific thing. You can actually tell it, okay, go into this menu, now go into that menu and go palette. And so you can drill down, and it's a really quick. One of the developers came to Academy last year and did a presentation on it, and showed us it running. And yeah, it's remarkable for not just for people who have, need to or want to interact with their computer audibly or audio with audio for sight reasons or whatever, but also motor control issues, right?
Definitely.
Which is even the bigger audience for that.
Absolutely.
And so yeah, you can actually set up these palettes very easily, and you can also get pre-configured ones, which is what Knights is doing, where it has Simon integration. And of course, for those who may not be in North America, there's a game we play called Simon Says, right? Where you have one person in the front who tells you to, lift your left leg and wiggle your ears, and only if he says Simon Says you're supposed to do it. So it's kind of a play on that. Anyway, so Simon, so Knights has Simon integration now. It has this, profile, so you can start up Knights, and if Simon's running, you can use Simon to move all your pieces around.
That's really cool.
And then on the other side, you can tell Simon, "Hey, read me out all the moves," so that you can sit there and the computer will read out what it's
Oh,
doing.
okay. That's what I was wondering. It's like, how are you going to know how to, what commands it understands or whatever. So that's cool. So you can have it run through the list.
Yeah, and the computer will, as it plays, will also tell you what it's doing.
Oh, that's cool too.
So you can sit there, and if you're, you've got a really good visual memory inside your head, or,
yeah.
or I guess spatial memory more yeah. than the visual, you can sit there, close your eyes, and play an entire game.
That's just cool.
Just with audio. And so that kind of thing I think is really exciting. These are the things that if you go back, you know, a few years, just weren't within our reach.
Yeah.
And now they are. So, you know, while the transition from the KD3 to the new 4.X series, we did have some early bumps with accessibility. We're starting to get these back again. And with a compositing window manager, we're able to provide a lot of features that we just couldn't before as well, such as being able to, in real time with good performance, alter the colors of the screen. So we can, you know, make everything high contrast, we can invert colors, we can do these kinds of things that before we had to have add-on software that did kind of an okay job of it. Full screen magnification with, you know, high fidelity, and these kinds of things that are only really possible when you have a composited window manager, and Quinn's doing a good job of that. So, you know, long story short, we still have, you know, road ahead of us, but we've also come a long way, and where we are is pretty cool. And for anyone who's listening, you know, the payoff for listening to all this rambling about accessibility, even if you don't use it, definitely check out Simon, because even if you don't use accessibility features, it is very, very cool.
Yeah. Now, does Simon, is it only work under KDE, or can you implement it into, you know, any of the other desktops, like will work under GNOME or like XFCE or whatever? Like, is it an open, you know, stack for accessibility, or is it kind of tied into the Qt system?
It's written in Qt, but it's not tied to Qt or KDE.
Okay.
In fact, if I'm not wildly mistaken, I'm pretty sure I'd have to double check, but I'm 99% positive without checking. I didn't do my homework on this because I didn't know we were going to get into it. But
it's no problem. Well, I didn't like technically start the interview yet, so I just wanted to, you know.
But yeah, I think Simon, I'm 99% sure Simon's also available even for Windows, Microsoft
okay.
Windows.
Okay.
So it's very flexible, and you can assign random commands. So you could drive things by dbus. You can launch commands, launch applications. It has a bunch of presets as well that are kind of template things that you can do with it.
Okay.
So you can have it, you can basically turn it into an application launcher and various other things. When it gets to really tight integration, like with what Knights has done as one example, which I'll keep harping on because it just happened yesterday, then of course you get even deeper interaction with the application.
Yeah.
But it's flexible and generic enough to be used not just with, say, Plasma Desktop, but with whatever operating system and desktop you prefer.
That's awesome. And then I have one last quick thing that I want to run through with you is I spoke with Rex, who works on KDE for Fedora, and he mentioned when I was interviewing him about I'm not going to remember the name of it now. He said that there was sort of like a screen reader-ish type of thing implemented in 4.6. It's called, like, it starts with a J. It's like someone's name or something. I don't want to say Joshua, but something like that.
Yeah, the new screen reader.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can find that one, too.
Yeah, I can't remember the name.
Jovi.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah, that's it.
Yep.
Now, like, do you know, I haven't installed, downloaded OpenSUSE 11.4 because I know that implements 4.6. Do you know, like, do you have a rough idea of, like, how well it works or how much, you know, how much of it does work or, you know, do you have any idea of where the state of that is at yet?
Yeah, it works quite well. It's interesting because as I mentioned before, we had a screen or a text-to-speech system in KD3, and this is really the next generation of it per se.
Okay.
So there's still the K-Speech API.
Yeah.
And what it really does is it sits in front of and kind of hides a dbus system.
Yeah.
So applications, and again, not just KD applications, but any application that wishes to use it can access the dbus service. It's org.kde.ktsd, which is a whole jumble of letters. but it stands for KDE Text-to-Speech Daemon.
Okay, yeah.
And Basically, the application sends it requests over Dbus. Basically, here's text, here's the context for it. Can you please talk it? Speak it. And there's different features it has. Plain text or HTML
is,
or
is Jovi then a screen reader like Orca and GNOME, or is it more just kind of like a terminal? I'll repeat whatever text I see come across the terminal.
Right. So Orca and the stuff that sits in front of ATK SPI goes through the hierarchy of objects in a window and interacts with them. So it sees a button and it goes, okay, here's the text on the button. Here's the accessibility label for it. And it can go in and basically determine what is the interface and lets you and the full round trip as well, that it allows you to interact with it. Mm. What text-to-speech does is similar, but not so much about the interactive elements. It's more about actually reading blocks of text. So you could use it to, read out here, what's on this button when it gets focused or whatnot.
Right.
But the kinds of things that it's usually used for are, when you put something on your clipboard.
Yeah, or like if you wanted to read a PDF file to you or something.
Right, or being able to... Right, or being able to read a web page.
Okay.
And in a way that actually makes sense, right? Or when notifications happen. So, there's new updates for your OpenSUSE 11.4. Okay. It's brand new. I'm sure there'll be updates every day for a while now.
Yeah.
When that notification pops up, it can automatically be read out.
Okay.
To you, and that uses the text to speech. The clock, when it changes time, every 10, 15 minutes, hour, whatever you set it to, you can have it read out the time to you.
Okay.
Audibly, that uses the back end as well. So it's really more for applications to say, oh, here's some text that the user needs to be able to be aware of.
Okay.
And it instructs it to read it.
So it's not going to necessarily let me navigate the desktop, but if a notification pops up, it'll say, "Hey, there's text here. I'm gonna read it."
Right, which is something that the other tools that are really more about navigating the desktop may not be as well suited for.
Okay.
Because the application, such as a notification manager or the clock, for instance, will know when it needs to have something said.
Right.
And then it can just send this background process that just sits there and tell it, hey, we need to talk about this now.
Okay. So, yeah, because from what I've seen on the accessibility list, it seems like they're trying to get the ATSPI like bridge working. It just seems like they're, from what I've been reading, and they're just trying to be able to figure out a way for, to kind of get Orca moved over to KDE and figure out how to let Orca maneuver the KDE desktop.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the accessibility... the amount of resources for accessibility is low.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like that everywhere in open source. It's amazing what we manage to do with as few people as we do, which I think really speaks to the lean processes that we have in place.
Mm.
We have orders of magnitude more people now than, say, when I first got involved with KDE, but it's still limited. And accessibility is extremely limited. It's just not a huge... It's not perceived as being a huge audience.
Yeah.
And it's often not easy work, and often the people doing the work may not directly benefit from it themselves.
Yeah.
So there are some people that definitely are working on it that benefit from it and so are scratching their own itch, so to speak. But not everyone is. And so it's the amount of resources is fairly small. And so pragmatically, we look at it from the KDE community and go, we're not exactly religious about our toolkit and whatnot. What's important to us is there's a good user experience.
Right.
And if, when we look at things pragmatically and go, here's the amount of resources available, do we really need to, rewrite Orca just because it's not written in our toolkit of choice?
Mm.
The answer is, well, given the resources we have, the quality of Orca, et cetera, not really.
Yeah.
So... it's the reason why, we use Inkscape for, most of our icon creation for Oxygen. even though it's not, you know, a Qt or a KD application.
Right.
Who cares, right? It's free software and it does the job well.
Right.
So we don't start this huge, you know, program to rewrite Inkscape, but in Qt. So it's the same thing with Orca. And the nice thing about ATSPI is it is in theory, and especially once, you know, we really get the dbus driven stuff, you know, fully on the rails, it is, you know, neutral and independent of toolkit and whatnot. It doesn't care. So we look at it and go, we want to get, you know, Orca and all these other tools, because if we can give and this was really the vision we had with even in 3.x days, if we can take our tools and, you know, other people's tools, we put them all together, we'll pool all our resources and everyone will benefit. Which is interesting because in the 3.x times, we specifically chose to work on tools that weren't available at the level we wanted them to be. We started there. So, for instance, we had a screen magnifier that did things that just weren't available elsewhere in free software. And that was, you know, instead of rewriting Orca or whatever. We obviously had, at the time, Kicker applets, and we have now, you know, Plasma widgets, plasmoids, that do things like show the keyboard status. And we have that because that's specific to the desktop shell. There's no way around that.
Right.
However, we do, they do, for backend, use the exact same existing systems that everyone else's does. And again, that's also purposeful because we want it all to work together and we don't want to, you know, duplicate work. The ultimate goal is to produce, you know, a kick-ass system. And that has a lot less to do with religion and a lot more to do with pragmatism. So I know I'm excited about where things are headed. And you're right. There's been a resurge of, you know, excitement and interest recently with accessibility and KDE, which is good. It kind of comes in waves and fits and starts as people become available, have more time, and random happenstance occurs. And
XFCE, they just updated their roadmap, and they're saying they're hoping by the beginning or middle or something of 2012, they're hoping to be able to tie in Orca more with their desktop, because that's all GTK and everything. And I've emailed them a few times saying, hey, it'd be great if you could get Orca working on here. You're, you know, you must be halfway or three quarters of the way there, and, you know, it'd be great to have the option as a blind user. And a few people answered me back, and so, you know, it's just great to see more, you know, a blind user being able to have more choices than, you know, being tied into GNOME and, you know.
Absolutely. And I mean, this is one of the, excuse the puns, it's a horrible pun, but it was for me an eye opener. When I went to some of the conferences that I've been in, you know, the last almost decade now, for accessibility, and, you know, I met people that had all kinds of, you know, disabilities, who were active and participating in the development of free and open source software. People that I actually had no idea, some of them I had talked to before online, and it just never comes up, right? I
mean,
You know, you don't ask, so, you know, is there anything, you know, you know, do you have a broken leg or anything? I mean, no one asks these things, right? So, which is one of the beauties of the internet, really, as long as it's accessible. And so some people that I had no idea were, you know, in a wheelchair or, you know, had, you know, various vision challenges. You know, you show up at a conference and, you know, there they are. And it's like, wow, you know, it was so very cool to see these people, you know, involved. And it really, there was, I mean, no prejudice whatsoever, because we a lot of us didn't even know. There's no opportunity for it. And I think that's something that's really important to pass on to, you know, others who have, you know, various disabilities, whether it's, you know, things that are, you know, more serious, like, you know, loss of, you know, limb use or, you know, blindness or deafness, or, you know, even just, you know, think people that struggle with things such as, you know, Asperger's syndrome. Various things. Free software tends to be, in my experience anyways, extremely open, and not just accepting, but to the point where you just participate at the level you can. And people are very cool with that.
Yeah, definitely.
And I really, really encourage anyone who's listening that, you know, if you have an interest in accessibility for personal reasons, because it's directly applicable to you, don't hesitate to get involved. Your participation will be extremely welcome. And we need people who are putting time and effort into it because they're scratching their own itch. It's one of the best motivators when it comes to creating something you're sharing with others.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Aaron. Well, I guess we're going to jump. Well, I'll start the interview, but I might patch some of this into the interview already. And I'll splice some of that in if we don't get a chance to getting back around to it. So definitely a good conversation. All right, so I'll just pause a couple of seconds and I'll introduce you. And are you like the project lead of KD? Like, what would you say your title is? Like, main developer? Or...
Well, people use that, but it's not quite accurate. I'm the team lead on Plasma.
Okay.
I sat on the board of directors and was president of our global nonprofit,
okay.
KDV. And I'm a I played a spokesperson on TV for the project. I'm a spokesperson with KDE and just help with the public. It's really hard to provide a traditional title when you're in a completely horizontal, flat, decentralized community.
Yeah, exactly.
and one of the things that's always awkward is when someone, you know, you're dealing with a journalist and they ask the same question, you know, you give the same answer. It's like, well, I'm, you know, team lead on this team and, you know, spokesperson with the project and, you know, was, you know, past president, sat on the board. And then they write the article and it's like, yeah, it's lead developer.
Yeah, so it's much easier.
and then I get back to, you know, my teammates and they all kind of, it's like, dude, really? I'm like, yeah. What I said.
You hop in the IRC room and they're like, oh, hello, team lead of everything.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thanks for the recognition, dude.
The best was another one of our PR people, Stuart Jarvis. He gave an interview and it was translated from English into I forget what language. And then someone from some Asian country, I think it was, retranslated it into English for their website. So they'd have it in both the local language, I think it was Chinese or something. So both the local language, but also English for people who read their site and speak English. But they translated it from the translation. And he went from being a PR spokesperson to, in the English version, King of KDE.
Oh, there you go.
Someone found this, and oh, we had a great time with that one. So we just call him King Stewie now.
Yeah, exactly. Not going to live that one down. All right. Well, like I said, Aaron, I'll just pause and then I'll introduce, start everything.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net. So head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.